Hello, this is Janet Michael. In addition to hosting The Valley Today each weekday at noon on the River 95.3, I also produce podcasts, and I'm excited to kick off season two of our podcast series in partnership with Rappahannock Electric Cooperative called We Are REC. Every month, we'll release a new episode talking to different people from REC about a host of different topics. We'll get tips for saving money on your electric bill. We'll talk about renewable energy and the impact it can have in our communities. We'll get some behind-the-scenes info about what happens when the power goes out in a storm. Don't miss out on information about community grants, scholarships, REC-hosted events, and more. Get every single episode on our website at theriver953.com under the podcast tab, or you can subscribe for free in Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, on Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts, just search for We Are REC. We are having a conversation today with Tim Campbell. He is a lead lineman for Rappahannock Electric Cooperative. Joining us on the Zoom screen is Will Jordan. He is an apprentice lineman for REC. Thank you guys for taking some time to chat with me today. I'm excited to learn a little bit about what a lineman does every day. Let me start with you, Tim. You are the lead lineman. What does that mean? Are you in charge of all of the linemen? What does a lead lineman do?
The lead lineman is basically in charge of 3 to 4 guys on a crew. I have a foreman who would be my boss, who does all the job site, a scout and time, the paperwork, stuff like that. And then I'm usually on the site with the crew to run the job and make sure everything goes smooth, safe, just kind of teach the guys as much as I can.
How many crews do you guys typically run in a day?
We have 3 different crews that work together on different jobs, but typically we do probably 3 to 4 jobs a day. And then there, like I said, there's 3 crews, sometimes 4. They'll break us off a little bit more sometimes to get some extra stuff done.
How long have you been at Rappahannock Electric Cooperative?
Since the transition when Rappahannock bought out Allegheny Power back in 2010, I believe it was June of 2010. I was with Allegheny for about 12 years before that. So going on about 23 years now.
So you're an old timer.
Yeah, unfortunately I am.
Now, Will, you are an apprentice lineman. What does that mean?
So when you get hired on, it's an 8-step program that starts you at step 1, and you have to go through the apprenticeship program. And at first, probably the first year or so, you're mainly on the ground. And then as you progress, they let you do more and more. And then by the end, you're usually up in the bucket most of the days.
Why did you choose this as your line of work? No pun intended.
Well, I was going back and forth rather going to college. And honestly, I'm not much on school. And I like being outside. And I knew REC was a great company to work for. So that's why I did pretty much being outside, and you get good benefits and all that.
So, Tim, you've been a lineman for quite some time. Is the apprentice program that Will is going through now kind of the same as it was? I mean, did you have to go through an apprentice program years ago when you got started in this?
We did. It was a little bit different. They go to a school now, and they're actually taught by people that are not part of REC. It's a program. Whereas when I started, we went away up to Fairmont, West Virginia for we started the first school was 6 weeks. We went up there for 6 weeks and did basically our apprenticeship. And then when we come back, it was pretty much hands-on. You're learning in the field. And then every year you go back to school for a couple weeks to progress. Where now their apprenticeship is 8 steps. We were basically an apprentice and then 3rd class, 2nd class. So some of the categories have changed, but that's the same kind of thing. You go, you start fresh, don't know anything, and you just work your way through, and hopefully you fall in love with the job and you just keep working and become a 1st-class lineman.
Are there still continuing education classes as a lead lineman? Do you still have to go take a class now and then or learn something new?
REC is really good. They're always sending us classes, even through this COVID. We've had a lot of Zoom, a lot of my classes just to become a better leader. More so now for me, it's not so much learning the job. It's more learning how to lead men, how to be a good leader, how to be the best that I can for REC.
And Will, you said there are 8 steps. You start at step 1. Are you still at step 1? How long have you been at REC?
No, I actually just about a month ago finished and got my journeyman. So it's roughly every 6 to 7 months you go to a class. So what is that, about 4.5 to 5 years to go through it all? I would say it just depends. Sometimes it's 5 months, sometimes it's 7. But that's how often you go, roughly every 6 to school.
So were there times when you first started that you thought maybe this wasn't such a great idea, or have you been all in since day 1?
No, I've always enjoyed it. Even when you have to work all night, it kind of stinks because you're tired, but I don't know, it's exciting at the same time. It's usually after a storm or something when you have to work. That's exciting, so you usually stay awake pretty good.
Tim, is that one of the hardest things about your job is the fact that you don't have a regular 9-to-5 Monday through Friday kind of job?
Yeah, that's probably the toughest part is when we were hired back at Allegheny, that was one of the first questions. I said, this isn't a 8-hour day job. This is a 24/7, 365 job. And they wanted you to be willing to be available at all times, because when most people are at home and they're hiding from the storms, we're going out and working and trying to get people's lights back on in the middle of the wind or the middle of the snow. Or so when everybody's praying for snow, I'm like, getting on there and telling them, no, we're working in it. It makes it hard for us up in the mountains and stuff. But the good thing is we got a good company that takes care of us. We got some good benefits when we do have to work all night. They give us our rest to take care of our bodies. And it turns out to be really good.
Will, was that one of the toughest things for you to adjust to when you got started, was knowing that you kind of had to be on call, so to speak, and it didn't really matter what the weather was like or whether the sun was shining?
Yes, I know. You kind of know when you get hired on, like, what you're signing up for. So you kind of expect it, but I guess it is a little adjustment. This is pretty much the only job I've had. So right out of high school. So it's kind of what I'm used to, but I've only thing I've ever known.
Well, I will tell you, from having spoken with so many different people across the spectrum at REC and several linemen, this is probably the only job you're ever going to have, because you're not going to leave. Everybody loves working at REC, and you'll probably be in Tim's spot in 15 years when I do this podcast all over again.
Yeah, I hope if all goes well.
So, Tim, walk me through a typical day. Do you guys have regular hours outside of, say, a storm call?
Yeah, we do. Our regular hour, we work 10-hour days. So we're 7 to 5:30 typically. It's changed through the pandemic. REC's done a great job of keeping us as safe as they possibly can. And there for a while, we were actually working 6 12-hour days in a row, and then we would be off the next week. And then the other crews would work the next 6, and then they would be off the week we work, to try to keep us as isolated from each other in case somebody did get sick, in case something did happen. We was isolated, so there would always be somebody available in case there was an emergency that would come up. Now, our day, we meet at the shop unless we can load our material the day before. So a lot of times now we'll actually meet at the job site, do our work, go through our safety checks and everything. And then once our work's done for the day, then we usually go back to the office, load up, clean up our trucks, and we'll load up our job for the next day. And then at that point, once everything's done, then we go home. And it's been pretty lax. We don't really have to stay till 5:30 now. If we get done at 4:30 or 5, they don't mind us going home, because they don't want us kind of grouping up because of the whole COVID. So they've been great with that. I mean, they've really went to the front with what they've done to keep us safe.
It's interesting. One of the very first podcast episodes I did in this series, I chatted with Will Wilfong and his wife, Hillary. Actually, I wanted to get both perspectives of what it was like to go on the call and what it was like to be at home with no power while your husband was leaving to go give power to other people. And I asked him, what do you do when there's no storm? Do you guys sit around the shop and play poker all day? And he explained to me what Blue Sky Day was, and that you guys have stuff to do every day, whether it's because you're fixing storm damage or somebody's power is out. You have stuff that you're doing all day long. What kind of stuff are you doing?
On a normal day, it just kind of depends on what crew you are. We have an underground crew, so installing new services to houses or subdivisions. It's on the underground. And then you have overhead crews that do the overhead power lines. And a lot of times they replace poles. We have people that come and check our poles and have to rot it out at the bottom. We have to change those. Or cross arms, they rot. We have to change those sometimes. And just upgrading the system so it's more reliable, basically, is what we try to do usually in a day.
I think a lot of times those of us that just flip on the switch and expect the light to come on don't realize all of the infrastructure and the things that have to be in place for that to work when we flip that switch. And a lot of what you guys do is maintaining and making sure that that's going to happen when I do that, right?
Yes, ma'am. We pretty much have contractors that go around and they do a lot of our upgrade or new builds. And then we go behind, like Will was saying, and there's a company called Osmos that actually goes around and checks every pole in our system. And if they deem it to be dangerous, then they send it on a sheet of paper and then they give it to us. And then we have so long to replace all the poles. I think In 2019, I think the pole list was somewhere around 200 poles that we had to replace. So that keeps us busy along with any new work. Anybody that's building a new house, we do a lot of new hookups. So all the new buildings that you see, all the new subdivisions, we're in there constantly running new lines, hooking up those houses to give them power along with all the maintenance that we do.
If I notice something's wonky with the pole in my front yard, backyard, or down the street, I can also call and report that. And you guys will send somebody out to see if it's something that either Osmose hasn't gotten to yet. So we should still, as members, report when we see something wonky with our poles too, right?
Absolutely. Anything you ever see, REC is great about, they send it in a work form and then it'll be sent to me or the other lead lineman or foreman. And we'll actually be the ones usually that come out and check it to see if it's something that the crew needs to do, or they'll send it to a one-man service truck if they think they can handle it, and they'll send them out to check it. And then it just gets passed to whoever needs to complete the work.
So is everybody that is in one of those yellow trucks considered a lineman? You mentioned foreman, you're a lead lineman, Will is an apprentice. Who was in those yellow trucks when we see them tooling around town?
Everybody that's in the big derrick trucks or the big bucket trucks or even the little bucket trucks, they're all either apprentice lineman all the way up to lead lineman. And then I just was recently promoted, so I'm a foreman now, so I'm actually in a pickup. So all the guys you see in those trucks, they're all linemen or learning to be linemen, to be first-class linemen.
We're going to talk about storms in a second, but it just suddenly occurred to me, the other thing that you guys would probably have to go respond to are things like car accidents. If there's an accident and a car hits a pole, or I live in a residential neighborhood here in Middletown, and we had this crazy off-the-wall accident a couple of years ago where a tractor trailer that was not supposed to be on our road because our power lines are too low came barreling through and ran a stop sign and jerked the meter boxes and everything off the side of houses. You guys have to respond to that kind of stuff pretty quickly as well.
Yes, man. We have guys that are on call that they respond as soon as that happens, as soon as you were to call in. That goes to our dispatch, to our call center, and then they relay it to our dispatch, and the dispatch calls our guys like Will out in the middle of the night or whenever it would be happening. And then the goal is to be on scene within 30 minutes. So from the time you call to the time we show up, that's our goal. It's not always feasible because of where the guys live, but that's the goal, is to try to be ready that we can be there within that 30-minute time frame in case it is an emergency. We've had where the power lines were still hot, the primary lines, and you got a lot more stuff you got to do before you can actually go on the scene. You have to go and find where you can open it up. And there's a lot of things that go on before we get there, but that's kind of the goal, was to be there within 30 minutes.
So when there is a storm, is there a different system that is in place? How do you guys respond to, say, like we were talking earlier, the weather forecast says we're going to get an inch and a half of ice and a foot of snow. Do you guys have to do prep ahead of time? How do you get ready for a storm like that?
Yeah, what we do is typically it starts from the VP level in our company. They actually send out a thing that's called all hands on deck, which once that gets down to us, then we know we have to get all our trucks readied up. We have to get material, anything we think we might need, gas, fueled up the trucks, just everything ready to go. And then pretty much what they do is they'll put some of us on standby. So if, say, our typical day 7 to 5, they'll have half of us maybe go home a little early, but then we have to come back in at say 2, and then we cover till midnight. And then we have other guys come in at say midnight and cover through the night, just in case something were to happen. REC is very proactive in trying to stay ahead of the storms. It's always not possible because some of them are just so devastation. It's rough, but they do everything they can to get us out there and to get people's power back on or keep it on it as quickly as possible. Do you agree with that, Will?
Yeah, they usually release the all hands on deck so everyone knows to be ready to come in, and don't plan anything because you're probably going to be getting called to come in.
So, Will, have you found that in addition to being an apprentice lineman, you're also sort of a pseudo part-time weatherman because you're paying attention to the weather and the forecast a whole lot more, especially during the winter, than you did before?
Even during the summer, any day, you always pay attention just to see. Even because you're working outside, you got to always be checking the weather. I don't know how warm to dress or if it's going to rain, or I probably check it 4 times a day. You're always looking, always watching the weather. Every morning I check it and every evening too.
Now, I am a member of REC, so I use the Smart Hub app a lot. And I have been very lucky in that, other than the tractor trailer barreling down our street, we have very few power outages here. But I know that when there are power outages, I can check the app and it will tell me when you're on scene. It will tell me how long you expect it to be before power is restored. Is that something you guys are doing on site there, or is that going back to an office person somewhere to update that information?
When we get there, we call dispatch and let them know we're there. And from there, they're the ones that update the website. We're the ones that give them the ETR, the estimated restoration time, and when we get there, and we're the ones that give them the information, but they're the ones that physically update it on the app or the REC website.
And Tim, who makes the decisions about who gets power first, especially in a storm? I've spoken a lot with different representatives from VDOT, and they've explained to me the priority for clearing the roads. Do you guys have a priority system for getting power back on to different neighborhoods?
Yes, ma'am. It's pretty much, we have things on the line called reclosers, which kind of are like breakers in your home. So pretty much what we do is whichever recloser has the biggest outage. So if there's 500 people on your recloser and there's five on Will's, then we're going to go to yours first if we're tied up. As long as we can spread out, we'll split up and go as many as we can. But when it gets to be the big storms, and obviously there's 300 outages and we just don't have the manpower to split up, we go by numbers. We were trying to get the most people on the quickest. It's rough sometimes because you drive right by that single person and they're out there waving. But the thing is we got to try to get on 50 before we get on one, and we just work our way backwards. So we take all the big outages, we work them through, then we start going smaller and smaller until at the end of the storm, it's pretty much like a homeowner calling in saying there's a tree on the line, or there's maybe their house knob that holds the wire up. Maybe it's hanging loose from the house, the little stuff. So we just kind of work backwards and try to do the best we can to get the most people back on as possible.
I'll tell you, that's going to be my argument when my husband wants to move out into the middle of nowhere, is that no, because it's going to be forever for us to get power if we lose it, because we're not going to be on one of those loops where the majority of power people are.
Well, you're going to see too, when you move out of town, you get a lot more blinks. I don't know if you get many blinks where you live, but the further out you go, I notice a lot of people from town or the cities, they go out there like, my lights are blinking all the time. But what they don't understand is there's a whole lot of line between the substation and where they live. And so when those reclosers act, they blink the line to let an animal drop off the line, or maybe a tree limb burn off. It'll blink. And that's why your lights blink, is to keep the line up, but to drop off whatever the problem is. So when you are at the end of the line, there's like, say, four reclosers in a row. So you're going to see all four of them, whereas like where you live in Middletown, there's only one. So you're only going to see that one, but there's more past you that blink all the time too. So the further out you go, not only will your lights probably go out more because you're in the hills, but your lights are going to blink a lot more. And that's probably the biggest thing most people don't understand.
Oh, see, I didn't understand that. So thank you for explaining it to me. I know that sometimes you guys go out of the area. We see during some of these massive storms that you guys will go and help. Most recently, you guys went to Southside and helped them because they got a lot worse end of the storm than we got here in the Shenandoah Valley. Who decides, and how is it decided who's going to go away and provide mutual aid?
That too comes from a little bit higher up than our office. They call down and say they want so many men to go, and then there's a volunteer. We have actually in our office, we have a list. So if they need six guys, and they'll go by the first six guys on that list if they want to go. And then the next trip would go to the next however many. So that's how we decided locally. But from the company standpoint, they actually talk to Southside and will get a number of crews that they can afford to send, basically, because we want to make sure we're taken care of here first. And then once that happens, then they get the crews together, and then we all meet up and go down. And me and Will were lucky enough to go to Southside on this trip. And I tell you, that was I've been to New York and North Carolina. I've been to a lot of places with Allegheny. We don't get to go as much with REC as we like to. We all like to go help out, but it was one of the most devastated areas that I've really been in on a storm. I mean, we went on lines where there'd be 13 spans of wire and every span's down, broken poles, there's trees everywhere. Like there's no wire up in the air. And we're just like, oh my gosh. So like you try to figure out where to start, you know what I mean? Cause you just, it was awful. It really was.
What kind of a learning experience was that for you, Will? Was that your first opportunity to leave this area and go help another company somewhere else?
A couple of years ago, we had a bad windstorm here that took us a week, but that was here. But this is the first long trip where you stayed in a hotel. And like I said, we had that windstorm here, and it was even way worse than that. So it was definitely a learning experience. The most I've seen down was maybe one or two spans of wire. And like Tim said, it was like 13 in a row. So it was kind of overwhelming at first, but you just got to work your way through it.
So where is the furthest away that you've gone, Tim?
The first I went, I guess, would probably be up around Niagara Falls. I went down to Raleigh, North Carolina, but pretty much right up around the Canadian border. We never really went too far, too much further than about 8 or 10 hours back at Allegheny. And here we pretty much stick to co-ops. So we stick to the co-ops that are local around like Northern Neck and those areas where they get hit by the storms. And we don't really travel like a lot of the contractors do, or like the big power companies do, where they'll go to Florida when a hurricane hits or something. We typically don't do that too often. We did send some guys to Bolivia to build a line there. The company still does some things to try to help, but we try to stick to the local.
The co-op community, which makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you get on site somewhere like that, like Southside, for example, how does it work? Is there somebody there that then kind of becomes your boss and says, here's where we need you to go? What are the logistics of leaving your territory and going to help somebody else out in theirs?
Yeah, typically like when they come to ours, like we have people come in, we'll put one of our designers or leads or foremen with the crews that come in. When we went down there, they kind of did the same thing, but they were kind of under the gun because they had so many people coming in because it was so bad that actually the first couple of days, the guy kind of gave me where to go. And he's just like, here, go. This is where you're at. And I took Will and two other guys, and we kind of just went and did our thing like we do back home. And we just had to really double up on safety, but it went smooth. It's just, they were so shorthanded that they just didn't have enough people to go around. They had, somebody was telling me, over 900 crews in there. So in those little offices, there's just a crazy amount of people. I don't know how they kept it straight. I mean, they just had so many people in there.
Do you find that a lot of the stuff that you do here on a regular basis is similar when you get to some of these other places? They're not doing it differently than what you're used to doing, are they?
No, it's pretty much the same. I mean, they might build their lines a little bit different. Their spacings and stuff like that might be a little bit different. But for the normal person, just to look at it, it's pretty much the same thing. The only thing you got to watch out for is different companies use different voltages. So you just have to watch out for that. Like when we went down the south side, their voltages were higher than what we use. So we had to do everything dead because we didn't have the gloves and sleeves to work that stuff hot. So we would just kill it, do what we had to do, and then make it hot. Whereas their guys have sleeves and stuff for that voltage, and we're able to, they could work it hot if need to be.
So what is the thing, Tim, that you love most about your job?
Mine is honestly just being able to get a gratitude for being able to help people. I really love the storm trouble, the outages. When we went down south side, those people were so thankful. It just feels good to be able to help people, to do the right thing. And electricity is something everybody, like you said, like switching on a switch, but as soon as it goes out, everybody's like lost. Like it's just, and they get, some people get really grumpy. But the thing is they're really gracious and they're really thankful when you do come out, and everybody thanks you because of all the hours. And at the end of the day, it's a great job to take care of my family.
So Will, is it all measuring up to what you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, for the most part. Like I said, before I decided what I wanted to do, and I actually went to climbing school on my own before I got hired, and they kind of get your feet wet in it. Kind of give you a taste of what it's going to be like. So it's pretty much what I expected, but I'd have to say best part too on storm trouble, like Tim said, getting people's power back on. And even on a normal day, just you're not even getting anyone's power back on, just doing normal maintenance. I'd say the camaraderie with the crew, everyone, I don't know, it's a good time too. As far as being at work, everyone's joking around and it's fun too.
And that makes a huge difference. When you like the people that you work with and you all get along and you have shared values, it really does make the workday not feel so much like a workday.
Yeah, there's definitely lots of jokes and stuff that go on. And then when you have to be everyone serious and stuff, but at the same time, when you have time to cut up and have fun, that we all do for sure.
So as the apprentice, that kind of makes you the rookie. Were they a little rough on you in the beginning? Did they make you like do crazy stuff? And did you have to go get their coffee and do all of that kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I kind of ask for it though sometimes. So I dish it out a lot too. So I can take it. Now I've gotten about 5 years in. So thankfully now some younger guys have gotten hired. So I've got some seniority now, but everyone gets it. dishes it out.
So you mentioned earlier that you're at the journeyman stage now.
Yeah, about a month ago, I'd say I finished the apprenticeship program, took my final test, and got it's called journeyman lineman. And basically that means you're just done with the schooling and all your tests, and you can go out and run calls by yourself. The only thing you can't do, you can't have an apprentice with you. So in a year from now, it's called at our, every company does a little different. You get first class if you think you're ready. And then that's kind of as high as you go until if one day you become a lead or a foreman. The first class is kind of where most guys go. So I should have about a year before I can apply for that.
And I'm guessing neither one of you were afraid of heights when you decided this was going to be your career path.
When you're in the bucket, I'm fine. If you don't climb for a while, the first few minutes up there, it's a little, I wouldn't say you're 100% comfortable. Once you start working there, then it's fine.
I guess I never really thought about those two being different, but yeah, now that you mention it.
Yeah, and like with nowadays, we have a belt. It's called a buck squeeze. It goes around the pole. So when you climb with that, like you really can't fall, but just a couple feet because the belt will hold you. When I started, we didn't have that. So we would free climb all the way up. So if you were scared of heights, you're not going to make it past the first day of apprentice school because you have to go up and climb around the pole and you really have nothing keeping you from falling other than the gas that's in the pole. So from that standpoint, safety's gotten a lot better, but definitely any of the older guys, I would say for sure, were never scared of heights. Now, some of the younger guys, you can, once in a while, you can see a little bit of it, but they break through there. They, once they do it, they understand that nothing's going to happen. Then they all get comfortable and they go about their way. But for the most part, it's definitely not something you'll be scared of heights. That's for sure.
And yeah. I seem to recall reading somewhere about a lineman's rodeo. Have either of you guys ever participated in that? What is that exactly?
I'm going to let Will do this one. I was only a reserve for the very first year. Will's actually the climbing champ. He might not tell you, but he actually won the hurt man, which is where you climb up the pole and you rescue a dummy and drop him down to the ground. And he actually was the fastest one. So I'll let him tell you about that. But he's really good at what he does. And so he's a good one to talk to about that.
I don't know about that. I retired now from that. But now I did it my first year as an apprentice here. I did it. We get it probably – maybe one day a week for a couple hours, they let us practice, REC lets us practice and stuff. And then the week before the actual rodeo, they let us practice all week. And it's usually five events. And you got a written test is one of the events. And then CPR, first aid, you have to perform a CPR on a dummy. And that's the one day you do those two events. And then the other three events are climbing events. And how you can win the individual events. And there's also an overall winner. They total up your scores. So the last 2 years, they got canceled or COVID and stuff. They haven't had it, but it's definitely a good time. It's all the co-ops usually in Virginia and even sometimes North Carolina, or I'm trying to think, I think Kentucky's been there. So it's usually about 70 or 80 apprentices. At least when I did it, that's how many were there.
So hopefully we get on the other side of this pandemic. You're going to have to come back and protect your championship.
Once you reach the journeyman stage, it's actually a team thing. It's three people that have to do it.
You bring up a good point that sometimes we don't think about on the other side of this is you talk about climbing a pole and rescuing somebody. This is highly dangerous work. This isn't just getting the power back on. This is stuff that is dangerous. Tim, when you first got started all those years ago, was that scary? Did that keep you maybe from thinking this might be something you want to do?
No, I didn't really look at it like that. I think it was just because I wasn't very smart. When it comes to that, I was in college and my dad worked for Potomac Edison for 40 some years. So I kind of knew a lot about it. He was an engineer with them. And so when I got to the point where I've been in school for 2 years and it just wasn't working for me. And he helped me get on at Allegheny. And when I went to school, everything was a little bit different. Everybody's new. But when I came back with the older guys, they had such a great safety record at Winchester. It was probably one of the best in the company. It was, I think, like 15 years where nobody got hurt or nothing had happened. And the guys were really safety oriented. And when you went to do something, they'd just start hollering a little bit. I can't really say it on here, but they let you know and they kept you in check. And it was really good because they made it seem so much easier and safer than what probably it was back then compared to now with the new tools and the things that we have. We have things, our crimpers and things that we have are so much easier on us now. And so it's just, I never really got to the scared part. I think if I would have, I wouldn't have stayed. You know what I mean? Everybody's like, you know, electricity, like they're scared. You're either scared of it or you're not. Like there's no in between because you can't see it. So most of the time you're going to see that you just got to have a respect for it.
So how about you, Will? Was that a deterrent at all, or was it just not a consideration for you when you decided this was the path you were going to take?
I wasn't really worried about getting hurt or anything like that, because I know that it is dangerous, but as long as the procedures and protocols they have in place, as long as you don't cut corners and do things by the book how you're supposed to, it is safe. They've been doing this work for years and years and years, and they've learned and made safety rules. So as long as you do what you're trained to do and supposed to, it is safe, or safe as can be.
Had a lineman tell me once that it was safer for him to restore somebody's power than it was for him to get in his car and drive 10 miles down the road, because he could control his environment when he was restoring that power and knew what to do. But when you get in the car, you have all these outside factors that you have no control over. So to him, his job was safer than driving to the grocery store.
Yeah. There's a lot of truth in that. You can't control other people.
So as long as you do what you're trained to do and supposed to do, that it is very safe.
So, Will, what do you say to somebody who maybe is listening to this podcast and thinking, you know, I really want to do this for a living, but maybe they're put off by the fact that it's going to be years before they get the actual job that they think they're applying for because of the apprentice program? Do you have any advice for somebody on why it's worth it?
I looked at it as, if I go to college, you're paying in to go to college and not really making money, and so you're in college debt, or someone had to pay for it. And this job, the apprenticeship, you're not making top dollar right away, but you are making good money still, and you get raises as you go through it, and they pay for the apprenticeship even. So they're paying for your school and you're making money. It was definitely worth it for me, especially if you're 18 or 19 out of high school. Starting pay is great too. So the 5 years is definitely worth it, in my opinion.
And when you tell people who you work for and what you do, do you have a lot of them that say, well, how can I do that? What do you tell them?
Yeah, mainly it's just younger kids that I coached. I do a travel baseball program. Matter of fact, the last kid that was hired was a kid I tried to get to play for me. He's 19. He's the same age as my son. And they'll ask, like, what do you do? And when you let them know, then they're like, oh, well, how do I get into it? Where should I go? Or I've even had parents call and be like, my son's not really into college. I think he would like to do what you do. What's the best avenue for him to take? And I try to just give them, you know, the information that I have as far as going to schools, as far as lineman schools, or if they get lucky enough, like at REC, you can get lucky enough and be hired right off the street. You have to crush the interview, but typically they like having guys that have been to like that lineman school in Georgia or Florida, and they just try to get the best applicant they can. And with our job, it's so hard because it's not your typical job. So you get them in there, and then sometimes it takes a little while for them to get comfortable, but you try to just let them know it's a process and not to give up after the first time if you don't get on, because it is a career. And you got Shenandoah Valley, you got multiple companies around that can hire you to do what we do. And like Will, once he gets his first class, he can go anywhere in the country and pretty much apply for a job. If he wants to move, he can get a job. And I think one of his life goals was always like to go to Colorado and stuff like that. But there's a shortage of linemen, and you can go anywhere you want to go. If you're willing to move, it's a great job to get into, because you really are endless to where you can live with this job.
And you're right, there really is a high demand for that type of job right now, and especially for somebody who wants to be outside, because you really are outside more than you are in the shop or in an office somewhere.
Yeah, we're outside probably, I'd say 80%, maybe a little bit more than that. It just depends on the weather, of course, and what we have planned. We're now, especially, they don't even want us going in the office except to get our material. So we're literally in there maybe 30 minutes a day, and the rest of the day we're out either at the job site or whatever. We're not inside a whole lot, and you can get used to it. You like the outside. I mean, I get a little stuffy when I'm inside too long. You get in here and it's just not the same, but yeah, we're definitely outside a lot.
So, Tim, you're a foreman now. You told me at the beginning of our conversation, how many years have you been with REC since they took over?
They took over in July of 2010. In July, it'll be 11 years.
Are there people that have been there longer than you in your position that are linemen or foremen?
Unfortunately, no. I think I'm the oldest foreman that we have. There's a couple that are a little bit younger than me. And then my direct boss, the general foreman, actually started together, but he was actually a couple of days before me. So we grew up through the apprenticeship program together and been working together for the entire 23 years. But then most of the other foremen are all younger. There is one other foreman, I believe he's got probably 30 years in, but other than him, I think everybody else is younger. So before I got this foreman job as a lead, I probably was the oldest lineman by about 10 years, I'd say. Our shop is really young because of that whole buyout. So when we came from Allegheny, we were all older guys and we were shorthanded. So we had to hurry up and hire a bunch of people because we had this big area, but we only had 10 guys. So everybody that we've hired over the last 10 years, you know, are all young guys like Will. And so our shop's really, really young. Like we don't have many guys older than, like I'm probably the oldest, one of the oldest ones at 45. So everybody's like in their 30s or 20s. We got a really young group.
Have a lot of them that came on board 10 years ago, are they still there with you?
Yeah, just about everyone. Typically, we don't lose them. They stay. You're not going to find another job like REC around here. And you try to explain it to the guys and with the benefits. And yeah, we work a lot of hours, but they do so much for us that it'd be hard to find another place that does that, especially for a 20-some-year-old man.
Thank you both for meeting up with me today to have this conversation. I learned something every single conversation I have with somebody from REC, and this is no exception. So thank you both. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, and have a good day.